This is Agriculture Today.
U.S. economy added just 22,000 jobs in August, showing little change from earlier in the summer. That's according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And while growth continues, National Federation of Independent Business, or NFIB, says hiring remains a major challenge, especially for small firms in rural communities. NFIB's September survey found 32% of small business owners still have job openings they cannot fill, and it's unchanged from August, near historic highs. For rural employers, labor shortages often hit harder. Many small-town businesses depend on a limited workforce pool and competition with larger employers in nearby cities can drain skilled workers. Now, in ag, construction, and local services, job postings going unfilled despite owners offering higher wages. NFIB reports 31% of small businesses raise pay in September, yet half of those hiring say they saw few or no qualified applicants. And while owners remain cautiously optimistic, with 16% planning to create jobs in the next 3 months, an imbalance between available positions and qualified applicants continues to stress rural economies. Well, if Congress fails to act, farm policy will revert to permanent law from 1938-1949. It would force USDA to prop up prices using parity-era formulas and tools like non-recourse loans, government purchases, and for some crops, quotas. Dairy would jump first the mandated purchase price pencils to $49.43 a hundredweight. That's roughly double recent market levels near $22.80. It would create the well-known dairy cliff. For crops, minimum support levels tied to parity would also rise well above today's benchmarks. Corn, about $7.45 per bushel, and that's up 50%. Wheat, 75% higher at $15.08 a bushel. And upland cotton, $1.59 per pound, up 65%. Soybeans not covered under permanent law, so no parity support price applies. USDA would need weeks to stand up rules, but the direction is clear. Greater intervention, higher federal cost, and market distortions until a new bill or an extension passes. Well, fertilizer availability and pricing could swing sharply if new U.S. sanctions on Russia land, with the effects varying widely by product. Russia, major exporter of nitrogen and potash, any disruption would immediately be reflected in dealer inventories and farm budgets this fall. Now, according to Josh Linville with StoneX, the most significant vulnerability is UAN. Global market is small, Western buyers dominate demand, and the U.S. relies heavily on Russian tons. A U.S.-only block would likely drive UAN values higher and keep those elevated until trade returns to normal. Urea would likely see a short-lived price shock. NH3 ammonia appears to be the least exposed, with no Russian tons flowing to the U.S., exports still below pre-war levels. Potash poses a moderate risk. Canada can backfill. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Wet corn already going out in the western two-thirds, going into feedlots.
That's Kansas State grain economist Dan O'Brien.
We're in the midst of harvest, and on the future side, it seems like we're loath for Dease corn to go far below 410, 415, something like that. So we'll see if that holds once we get into the depth of things. And then we have some positive carry still in the corn market. From Dease at 421, you go to March at 438, May at 447, July at 454, and September 464, 459 for next harvest. When, again, we don't know a lot about what that's going to be, but that kind of shows you where the market's neutral is. Again, next year, 454, around 450 until we get some information. And so some carry there, not enough sharp carry to reward storage on paper. And, we had a set of ag lenders meetings this last week, and the issue of storing grain versus selling it was one of the main topics that we talked about. Again, the fall harvested grains, and especially for corn, we're looking at how these carrying charges are not fully covering the cost of carry for on-farm storage, 2.5 cents a bushel per month, assuming about 5 cents interest. But the one thing I'd keep in mind is that right now, if you look at the futures market at any time, it's basically showing about a break even or so, just a so-so return to storage, unless you really get into a volatile time. So I don't think that the issue of sales now versus storage will really be, I guess the outcome of that's not going to be determined until we see what happens to usage, et cetera, in the coming month or so. And then there'll be even tougher decisions to make. For soybeans, we closed, actually have shown some strength in soybeans coming out of those Tuesday reports. November closed at 10.22 and a quarter, up 9 cents, over nine. January, 10.40. We've got a little bit better carry in the beans, again, from November to January, about almost 9 cents carry, about 7 3/8 January to March per month, about six or so. And again, that in general, I don't know that many people store beans on farm. We tend to move beans pretty quickly. So we're hanging around, again, 10.22 for November this year. Next year, just to see where the market invests itself when it doesn't know what size the crop or anything's going to be. November 26 is 10.68 and a quarter. So right now, we're about 46 cents below where neutral would be, i.e. for November of 26 compared to November 25 for the soybean contract.
Looking towards next year, though, Veronica Nye with the Fertilizer Institute.
In the first Trump administration, they found a way to provide additional support to the growing community when China did during the first exchange of tariffs and the drop off in demand from China. And so there is a bit of history there to support that grower sentiment and belief that that would occur. I think the belief that the administration will provide some backstop has likely muted that production response that might have been expected in this growing year otherwise.
Great.
But next year's planting decisions and as a result, fertilizer use patterns are going to be highly impacted by what happens in Washington in the next 6 months. And like I said, that barometer peaked back in May and has since fallen off in the last couple of months, but not nearly as much as you might expect if you're just watching what has been happening in U.S. commodity markets over the last, frankly, 2 years.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Soybean demand has changed with the boom in U.S. renewable diesel production. How has the soybean industry responded?
University of Illinois ag economist Joe Jansen.
When you crush a 60-pound bushel of soybeans, the standard board calculation assumes you get 11 pounds of soybean oil, 44 pounds of 48% protein soybean meal, 4 pounds of hulls, and 1 pound of waste. But we looked at the data, and they tell a slightly different story. Those proportions aren't as fixed as one might think, and the difference is reshaping the nature of soybean demand. To understand how, we broke down soybean crushing output using annual data from the USDA for the past 60 years. Let's start with our key finding. Waste rates in soybean processing have declined by 44% since the 1960s. We're talking about going from 2.7% waste down to just 1.5% today. Essentially, the industry figured out how to extract a percentage point more value out of every single soybean. This might seem small, but when you're processing billions of bushels, these small improvements add up to significant gains. But here's the important part. While waste was going down, soybean oil extraction rates were going up. Not only were crushers wringing more output out of each bushel, but the composition of that output was changing. Back in the mid-1960s, a typical bushel yielded about 18% oil. Today, it's nearly 20%. That means each bushel of soybeans produces about 10% more oil than it did 60 years ago. Importantly, the gains in oil output were larger than the decline in waste, so the composition of the crush was changing. Now, why does this matter? Enter the renewable diesel boom. Starting around 2020, demand for soybean oil as a biofuel feedstock exploded. If you're a soybean processor, you would have liked to dial up oil production while leaving meal production fixed. Here's the problem. If soybeans come in fixed packages, you can't make more oil without making more meal. Kind of like buying a combo meal. You get the fries whether you want them or not. So when renewable diesel created a massive new demand for oil, processing more beans in response would mean the market got more soybean meal as well. It's a byproduct. However, we found something notable in the data. Since 2020, right when renewable diesel took off, soybean oil extraction rates have been consistently above their 60-year trend line. This suggests the market is adapting in real time. The changes aren't huge. Changing the composition of the crush is like turning an ocean liner. It doesn't occur instantaneously. But there is some evidence of a response. One interesting part of long-run changes in oilseed crushing is that they aren't just happening in the United States. So it isn't clear that all of the observed changes are related to the renewable diesel boom. Argentina saw similar improvements in oil extraction rates, growing even faster as they caught up to American efficiency levels. Canada's doing it with canola oil too, though they've hit some challenges recently due to extreme weather affecting crop quality. So, what does this all mean? First, those standard industry calculations about crush ratios, the one that assume exactly 18.3% oil content, might need updating. It seems that the soybean industry might have a little bit more flexibility than the standard board crush margin suggests. When market conditions change, processors can adapt by tweaking extraction and improving efficiency. It's not instantaneous and it's not unlimited, but it is happening. Last, this has implications for farmers, food prices, and fuel markets. When processors can squeeze more oil out of the same amount of soybeans, it changes the economic equation. In future analysis, the FarmDoc team will explore these market impacts.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Let's talk about Cotton Research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
Our job has really been to share all of those facts that fertilizer is a globally traded commodity where the U.S. tax code and policies of governments around the world can impact manufacturing, distribution, and end use, not only within the industry, of course, but with U.S. policymakers, the growing community, and the media.
Veronica Nye is with the Fertilizer Institute.
Our industry is complicated, and frankly, data is not nearly as available about the fertilizer industry as really it is in other areas of agriculture. And so our job at TFI and our global sister industry association, the International Fertilizer Association, is to shine some light on those trade patterns to help other folks understand these trade patterns a little bit better so that when we do have these disruptions, when we do have geopolitical challenges, that it's much easier to understand those variations in price and trade flows. And, you know, I think here in the U.S., an important element for us has also been to help all of those involved differentiate between trade remedies that are leveled at the U.S. ITC versus those that have been put in place more recently through executive powers. The U.S. has, until somewhat recently, had some of the lowest tariffs in the world. And we've gotten a little out of practice about talking about tariffs. And so we have had a tendency in over the last 9 months to lump them all together. A tariff is a tariff is a tariff. And that's not really the case. And so we've had to sort of relearn how tariffs are applied and by whom and at what the frequency and the mechanism by which those tariffs can be applied and therefore or removed. So that's been also an endeavor across all of those different stakeholders that we talked about earlier.
She talks about ag support of the Trump administration despite challenges.
This has been an area that's been the most surprising for a non-U.S. audience because at large, the U.S. ag community has been a large and pretty loyal support base for the Trump administration in both the first iteration and now in the second administration. Surveys of growers have shown that they believe that a Trump administration will provide more regulatory certainty as well as a much more positive view on the U.S.'s long-run ag trade prospects. So I'll give you an example of the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer, which is a nationwide measure of the health of the U.S. ag economy that provides it at an index value level. So the index is based on a survey of 400 producers on economic sentiment each month. So despite low commodity prices that have persisted throughout the entire 24-25 growing season, the barometer jumped markedly when President Trump was elected, and it reached a four-year high in May. The barometer has since fallen as producer confidence in the future has waned some, especially among crop producers. But still, the index remains at the same level as it was around harvest of 2022 when commodity prices were much, much higher. So it, you know, as one sort of reads into that barometer, producers believe that this administration will find a way to be on their side, to find a way to help them out in their time of need.
It's Agriculture Today.
At Wiley Implement and Spray Center, we are here to keep your Case IH tractors, planters, sprayers, and other implements in tip-top shape this season. Whether you need in-shop or in-field service, Wiley has the factory-trained technicians to keep your equipment running with genuine Case IH parts. Give us a call today or go to WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
In the past 3 years, we've been dealing with all kinds of diseases across the dairy industry, both in the U.S. and EU.
Director of Dairy Marketing Insight for StoneX, Matt Donay.
In the U.S., we've had novel things like bird flu showing up in the dairy cows for the first time ever. Now, luckily, bird flu here in the U.S. hasn't been much of an issue this year. But the new concern is around the New World screwworm. This is a parasitic fly that lays its eggs in open wounds of warm-blooded animals. And now this is a little bit graphic, but the eggs hatch and then the larvae effectively eat their hosts. The screwworm used to be endemic to the southern half of the U.S., so we've dealt with this before, but it was eradicated from North America back in the 1970s. It's now making a comeback. It's come back up through Latin America, and it's been found just 70 miles south of the border between Mexico and the U.S. So there's a decent chance that it makes it into the U.S. From the experts that I've read, they think it's a 50-50 chance that it eventually makes it into the U.S. What impact it will have on milk production if it does get here is really hard to say. It depends on how widespread it becomes and what measures we have to treat it. The other issue could be that the government puts into place restricted movement zones where cows and cattle cannot be moved around the U.S. as easily as they typically are. And that might be an issue for the industry as well. So there's fears, there's legitimate fears. But it's really hard to say what impact it will have if it makes it here.
And what is the impact of trade and tariffs?
A customer asked me a very similar question earlier this week. They said, what have been the noticeable impacts of the trade wars this year? And or what impact have the trade wars had? And frankly, it's really hard to point to any real large impacts. We did have some month-to-month volatility. When China put an additional 100%, more than 100% tariff on U.S. dairy imports, we did see U.S. dairy exports to China collapse for a month. But then when China dropped those additional tariffs, we saw U.S. exports to China surge. We also have a little bit of a strange anomaly with butter trade flow statistics between Europe and the U.S., where we're probably going to see some strange movements in butter import numbers for the U.S. But if you zoom out and look at things at an annual level, it looks like U.S. imports will probably be a little bit lower than they otherwise would have been since the U.S. has had additional tariffs on our imports. And our exports might be slightly lower than they otherwise would have been just given the uncertainty around the trade policy. But there isn't much in terms of massive noticeable impacts at an annual level. And in fact, when you look at some of these commodities, our cheese exports, U.S. cheese exports are going to be record high this year. U.S. casein exports look record high. Our butter exports, they're not quite going to be record high, but we're talking about 100, 200% increases in butter exports thanks to very cheap U.S. cheese and butter prices this year.
He looks at the outlook for dairy.
From a long-term perspective, the U.S. population grows about 1% per year. Per capita dairy consumption grows by about 0.5% per year. So if U.S. milk production is growing at about 1.5%, the rule of thumb is that's a pretty balanced market. Over the last couple of months here, U.S. milk production has been growing over 3%. And with the expansion in the dairy herd that we've seen, we're probably going to continue to grow over 3%, at least through the end of this year.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
For wheat, we've been struggling with that question.
Kansas State grain economist Dan O'Brien.
It's an odd conundrum in a way in that that we've got the futures prices up front for the upfront contract, D25 now, below $5 at $4.98.5. July harvest of next year, $5.49.25. So about 50 cent differential again at kind of a familiar number from where we're at right now with our lead contracts versus next year's harvest. Just so-so prices, cost of production for a lot of Kansas budgets, $6 plus, $6.50, something like that. If you have, more so to the west if you have a fallow period in there. So these are price levels that a lot of producers probably aren't being encouraged by with regard to that. And we're seeing those right now during the time when, we're making decisions on seeding wheat or having done so already. You look at the cash markets, they're similarly reflecting harvest issues. Harvest pressures is a polite way to say it. The only cash corn price over $4 is at the top bid that I had seen yesterday in southwest Kansas around the Garden City area, about $4.17. Top bids beyond that, really Pittsburgh at $3.92, $3.82, Topeka, Colby, Hutchinson, $3.72 in Salinas. So nothing great to speak about. And for both corn and for grain sorghum, with grain sorghum bids being, in the Hutchinson area, we had the top grain sorghum bid at $3.57. All other areas of the state down at least 10, 15, 20 cents from that for the top bids. Basis bids for both corn and for sorghum tangibly suffering. But again, we're in harvest, and the real story on that will be what happens coming out of harvest thereafter when we deal with really some concerns probably about storage space at local elevators. Soybean bids, again, the top bid in the state, $9.64 in the Hutchinson area. And in looking at those, you had one or two elevators, terminals having strong bids and others coming in lower, $9.59 in Topeka, $9.52 in Pittsburgh, southeast part of the state, $9.49 in Salinas. So nothing great there. But then that you got to the western part of the state to look at wheat bids there. We've got some wheat bids for below $4 in the Pittsburgh area, southeast Kansas, top bid in the state for wheat about $4.54 in the Salina area, $4.49 Topeka and Hutchinson. But that's not really that's probably not the bid or the price that farmers considering sowing wheat this fall are looking at for winter wheat. You see new crop bids, top one in the state, $4.95. This is for June, July of 26 as a contract price. So top bid there, Colby, $4.80, $4.80 in Garden City, $4.75 Pittsburgh, surprisingly almost in the Hutchinson area, you know, a pretty strong wheat area for the U.S. We're at $4.44, $4.54 in Salina. So interesting around the state, not a time when farmers have a lot of enthusiasm for these cash bids, but we're seeing that the other shoe drop from having pretty successful supplies of crops, and we still have uncertainty about where final yields will be. And I would say just quickly on that uncertainty is probably going to be extended, or very likely to be extended, if the government shutdown that affects the USDA were to cancel, or at least temporarily for 1 month, not present an October 9th USDA NASP crop production or WASDE report. So we'll still be watching all sorts of harvest reports, et cetera, but we won't have an official number then until probably if this October 9th report gets canceled because of the government shutdown, then we're looking to see, well, do we do it in November? So that put a lot of pressure on that November set of USDA reports.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.